Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Inside Scoop Live, one of the many features of Reader Views. Hello, I'm Irene Watson, Managing Editor of Reader Views and the host for today. I'm really delighted to be speaking to Nick Pop today. He is the author of Handyman's Reality, and this is the book that we're going to be concentrating on. Nick, a native Hoosier, currently lives in Fort Wayne, Indiana. In addition to writing, he also works in the radio industry, admits to being that his career actually began in the days when disc jockeys actually spun records. Wow. Nick, that's been a while ago.
that kind of dates me, doesn't it?
It dates you. It does. And the Handyman's Reality, which is Nick's second novel, is what we're going to be talking about, as I said, and his first novel is actually The Handyman's Dream. So, Nick, is The Handyman's Reality a continuation of The Handyman's Dream?
Yes. The first book was about handyman Ed Stevens. He met the man of his dreams right on his front steps, and it happened to be a mailman. And the first book was them falling in love. It was, you know, this beautiful star-crossed, passionate romance and all of this. And this book starts the day after they've made an official commitment to each other, this new book, The Handyman's Reality. And this is more about making a relationship work. I mean, they've had the, oh, this is wonderful, we're in love, now it's okay, we're together every day, we're going to make it work.
So I can see that being a continuation. Now, the handyman, is the character a handyman?
Yes, he is.
And what does he do?
Well, to give you a little bit of Ed's backstory, what happened was he lives in this little town in Indiana called Porterfield. And after he finished high school, he went to work at a factory there in town, where actually his dad was employed. He was employed there until the mid-70s when there was a huge recession. He was laid off from his job. And kind of one of those moments where somebody called and said, hey, will you fix this for me? And he did, and he's very handy with that sort of stuff. The skills that he both learned and inherited from his father, and as a result decided to start his own handyman business instead of going back to the factory when he was called. And a great many of his clients are elderly people, and he doesn't just fix things for them. He does a lot of odd jobs and chores for them as a way of making life a little easier for them. They get to a certain age, there's physical things they can't do for themselves anymore. And he built up a thriving business, not just with repair work, but with also doing these, you know, maintenance sort of things for older folks.
And then he meets the man of his dreams, actually a mailman. Does the mailman come up to the door delivering mail?
Yeah, the first book begins, Ed's home for a lunch break. He's getting ready to go take care of a plumbing problem. He looks out the door, out the window, and sees this guy delivering his mail, and he's like, oh, boy. This is...
Sparks?
You know, because literally I think almost everybody has a mental image of who would be the perfect mate.
Well, of course.
Yeah. And this is what he sees delivering his mail, and this is kind of shocking, especially since it's this little town, population 9,000 in northern Indiana. And so, of course, from that point on, he's like, wow, you know, this guy's really great physically, but... one, is he gay? Two, would he be interested in me? And the most amazing thing is it turns out that, yes, the mailman is gay, and, yes, he's as crazy about Ed as Ed is about him.
So. That is too funny. Porterfield, Indiana. Is there such a place?
No. It is loosely based on a little town I grew up in northeast Indiana, but it's fictional.
What about the characters? Are they based on anybody you know or any of your own experiences?
I would say some of the minor characters in both books are based on people I knew growing up in northeast Indiana. The main characters, though, are pretty fictional. I always say that there was kind of a composite character of the kind of men that I wanted to write about that were kind of rumbling around in my head for a good 20 years or so. And so I can't say that they are based on myself or anybody I know, maybe the certain aspects of people I've known over the years. But the story was fictional, the characters are fictional, but a few characters wander in as supporting characters that definitely had inspiration from real life.
Sure. Well, and then I really question, you know, fiction, we call it fiction, that gives us a license to write a story out of our imagination, but I'm sure that someplace someone will relate to your story as though it was real.
Oh, yes. You know, I've got the emails to prove it.
I can well imagine, because you've written a story about two men that could be anybody, could actually be anybody and have the same characteristics or the same experiences. So let's go into experiences. Now, from what I understand, this is a story of two men and the relationship together.
Right.
Let's go into a little into their relationship and explain to our listening audience as to what type of relationship they really do create.
Well, first off, let me say that the story, excuse me, does take place in the very early 1980s, really the dawning of the decade. So you've got two men who are, when the story begins, are in their late 20s. So their experiences as gay men are very much based on that time period and also earlier periods throughout the 70s and back into the 60s. There was, as some folks would be able to relate to or remember, a kind of a hedonistic quality to gay life in the 1970s. It was very much the age of the whole gay liberation, not just gay liberation, but gay sexual liberation. And there were a lot of men who were kind of left out of that in the respect that it wasn't so much that they wanted to go out and really have a good time and experiment. What they wanted was a solid relationship with one other man. And that's what these two guys are both dreaming about, longing about, until they meet each other, and this develops between the two of them when they realize that they have the possibility of this kind of relationship forming between them. They're taking it pretty seriously. And in the second book, you know, they move in together, and it's about the things that happened to them then. And if I can climb up on my soapbox for just a moment.
Of course. With your permission.
Yeah, very much was a story I wanted to tell, because I think in today's age, here in the 21st century, so many people have a tendency to view relationships as being temporary or disposable. You know, we live in a very consumer culture where I think a lot of people do look at things as temporary, even their relationships with other people. I very much wanted to tell a story about a couple of people, in this case two men, who are in it for the long haul and are willing to do the compromising and the putting up with the irritating habits and all that sort of thing to try to make a really long-term, meaningful relationship work.
You had mentioned, Nick, that the 1970s, of course, were the beginning of the gay liberation. Do you find that we've come a long way since then?
Oh, absolutely. I graduated high school in 1979, and when I look back at that era compared to what it is here almost 30 years later, it's amazing the changes. Things that I would have never, ever even contemplated at that point in time have, you know, are coming to pass. I live a very out, very open life, you know, in a mid-sized city here in the Midwest, and I figured back then that I would be hiding to a certain degree my entire life, and that's not the case.
That must be very liberating.
I beg your pardon?
It must be very liberating to be able to look back and just, you know, what your thoughts were, that you weren't maybe going to be accepted by society, and all of a sudden now you're able to live openly as a gay person. And it'd be okay.
Yeah, it is. Like I said, when I look back, it's still, it is shocking, but also what is rather sad is that I've gotten, me personally, rather complacent with my own lifestyle. And every now and again, I'll make a comment to a friend or an acquaintance, and it's like, well, you know, Nick, it's not like that for all of us. And so, yeah, we've come a long way, but there's still a very long way to go.
And, yes, of course, but it's certainly changing, and it's for the better, for sure.
Oh, absolutely. Mm-hmm. And the fact that that we are here having this interview about this book tells you how much things have changed.
Oh, no kidding. No kidding. And from what I understand, too, your book is not like a lot of the gay fiction that is out there. There's sort of a stigma, or maybe there's realities. A lot of the gay fiction is based on erotic experiences, and your book is definitely not that. Is that correct?
That's correct. That was a very conscious decision on my part to close the bedroom door, so to speak, in these books, because there is not only is a great deal of gay fiction quite erotic, I think it's a bit of a stigma. And I kind of wanted to get away from that. I was just thinking about this the other day, that when I first started seeking out gay fiction on my own, and again, this would have been the late 70s and early 80s, there wasn't a whole lot out there. In fact, there wasn't much at all. And I vaguely recall a friend of mine giving me a paperback book, and it was a kind of book that you would buy in an adult bookstore. And, you know, and that's, a lot of times, that's all you could find. And so I wanted to say, you know, that's great, but I wanted to concentrate on the emotions, the relationship, the interaction between these people, and kind of leaving their sex lives to themselves. Plus the fact I've always maintained that imagination is a very powerful sex organ. So I kind of wanted the readers to let them take it wherever they wanted to.
I don't commend you for doing that. You know, just going away and from what the mainstream seems to be written about, you know, as the erotic and the sexual encounters in the gay fiction, but I really commend you in being able to just go away from that and write something like you say about relationships. It's fantastic, and I think that what's going to happen, too, is you're going to have a huge following. Your books are going to be classic. They're forerunners.
Well, and, from your mouth to God's ears, I'll tell you that much. But it is funny because when people do ask me what they write, I say gay fiction, and I usually get this big-eyed expression of shock or surprise, and for the longest time I couldn't figure out, why am I getting this reaction? And finally I realized it's because when I say that, people automatically assume that I'm writing sexually graphic stories.
So, is that true? So the original gay fiction was really more of the sexual stories rather than what you're writing?
No.
No.
Okay. Again, excuse me. I mean, if you go back and you look at the stories that came out even in the late 40s into the 50s, I'm thinking, you know, Gore Vidal or Truman Capote. You know, there was some physical contact and it was written, but the descriptions were vague. I think it's just been more of a liberating thing that probably came out of the 60s and 70s and has carried over into the current times. I think, too, and this is very basic, that when you have men dealing with other men, they're a good deal more open about that. And that's just something that a lot of people enjoy reading, enjoy writing. You know, I'm not going to lie, there are times I certainly enjoy reading it, but for myself, it just as a writer, it really didn't interest me. I thought, I know I can do this, but I'd rather concentrate on something else.
So let's talk a little more about you. And you told me earlier here that when you start this conversation that you are gay, and that you had a different vision from back in the 70s and what's really going on now. Was it difficult to come out in the open for you?
Oh, absolutely. You know, I grew up in a little town, and I remember kind of a moment of reckoning with myself, where I was admitting to myself, yeah, you know, you are, as we would say back then, a homosexual. And I was 15 years old when I admitted it to myself, and I remember sitting there thinking, nobody will know this, at least until I get out of high school. There was no way I was going to admit it out loud. There was no way I was going to act upon it. You know, I was frightened. And not unlike a lot of people in that era, my age and background and geographic background. Mm-hmm. So it was a very slow process for me. Although it's amazing I meet and have spoken with or communicated with so many men because of through the first book, The Handy Man's Dream, who came out very late in life, you know, in their 40s or even in their 50s, and they're like, wow, you know, you came out when you were 19, and I'm like, well, yeah, I was hanging out with gay people when I was 19, but coming out to family and in a work situation, that was a good deal slower.
So you kind of came to that realization at 15 years old, and then, of course, it was just a really scary time for you. And now you're telling me that it was actually when you were 19 that you came out in the open. So there was...
Well, when I say that, I mean that, fortunately, and it's interesting, the guy that the second book, The Handyman's Reality, is dedicated to was a childhood friend of mine, and we kind of came out to each other at about 18, 19 years of age.
Uh-huh.
And
wow.
He had gone away to college, and he'd pretty much thrown the closet door open and was running around with all these interesting people and learning all this stuff, and he would come home and tell me about it, and he kind of pulled me out into gay society, and there's really a difference between being out in gay society and being out in general.
Yes, I can well imagine that there would be, and just for a young man to be able to experience that, that must be so liberating, and the freedom that came with that must have been tremendous for you.
It was... Yeah, all of a sudden you go from being someone who's kind of lurking in the shadows through, you know, for me most of my teen years, to all of a sudden being more open and honest and having a lot of friends, a lot of experiences that I didn't get to have in high school. That I always say heterosexual people take their adolescence experiences for granted. Well, for gay men, we have a tendency to have those much later in life.
Well, sure, and it's probably a lot of that is because of the acceptance.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, sure. So, right now you are in the radio industry. Tell us a little more about what you do in the radio industry.
Oh, Lord, what don't I do?
You got a great voice.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, it's years of working at it, I guess. I started in radio when I was 16, and over the years I've been a disc jockey for a lot of different stations. Most recently, I work for two radio stations here in Fort Wayne. They're sister stations owned by the same company. And I was, up until the end of 2004, I was the music director for one of these two stations and did a little bit of everything else, production work, writing commercials, what have you. And when I decided I wanted to write full-time, I turned in my resignation. And they were like, no, you can't do this. And I'm like, yes, I can. But fortunately, awesome people that I work for, they're just great. And they said, well, if you still need some part-time work, you've got it. So for the past few years, I go in, occasionally do on-air work. I fill in the production department. And much to my surprise, about a year ago, the general manager suggested me as a fill-in receptionist. And I'm like, what? And she says, you would be great at it. She says, you've got the personality, you've got the voice for the phone, you can deal with the people. And I went, well, okay, so I do that now too.
All right.
Some people think that's a little peculiar. They walk in, they're like, there's a man sitting behind the front desk. And it's like, hey, it's 2007, get over it.
Exactly. Exactly. So you're writing, and when are we expecting the next book?
The third book?
Uh-huh.
Well, I'm not going to give you a date on that one. I do have a work in progress. It is not an Ed and Rick story. It is something else that's been on the back burner of my mind for many years. And it's coming slowly. But what I have, I really like. And what I've shown to a few people close to me, they're like, dude, this is good. Keep working on it. So.
Good.
We'll see what happens. I'm just not going to promise when it's going to come out right now. I mean, hopefully next year.
Mm-hmm. Great. Good. And I've been wanting to ask you this whole interview. Tell me what happens when you reported for jury duty in November.
Well, again, this goes back to the misconception of what I'm writing. Back in December, right before Christmas, I had to report for jury duty at federal court here in Fort Wayne. And so I go in there, and I'm sitting in the jury box, and no sooner had the judge begun to describe the case, I'm thinking, oh no, I cannot sit on this jury. It was from my hometown. The defendants were police officers that I had dealt with working in radio in this town, and I thought, no, I can't have any part of this. So I raised my hand and brought up my objections, and then the attorney for the plaintiff starts questioning me. You know, he's like, well, Mr. Polk, do you still work in radio? And I'm like, yes, I do, on a part-time basis. I also write. And he goes, oh, well, what do you write? And I hesitated for a moment. He says, well, do you write mystery stories? Do you write thrillers? Do you write stories based on true crime events? And something in the tone of his voice kind of irritated me, so I said in this microphone a bit too loud, I said, I write gay fiction. And there was this through the whole courtroom.
I can well imagine.
And I just sat there and I went, I guess maybe that's one of the times I should have said, I write non-erotic gay fiction. Needless to say, I ended up being excused.
Oh, that was too funny.
It was right before Christmas, so frankly I wasn't too upset at being excused.
You, and I wish we could continue talking, because you're a very interesting person, but however, we're just kind of running out of time, so at this point I'd like to have you tell our listening audience your website address so they can come and visit you.
All right, they can find me at www.nickpoff.com, which is N-I-C-K-P-O-F. F. And since this is on the phone, I'm going to say F as in Frank, F as in Fred, because a lot of people have a tendency to hear that as an S.
Yes.
But it is the letter F. So.
And it's Nick and Poff with a T as in Peter.
Yes.
Yes.
So it's Nick Poff, NickPoff.com.
Great. And I know that you'll get visitors to your website, and definitely, this is just really... A really great series that you're writing, and I really commend you for going from the mainstream, supposedly mainstream gay fiction, into something that really, really grabs to the heart and reality. It's more so realism, and I just commend you in being able to do that.
Well, yeah, thanks, and I appreciate that, because, again, as I've said before, I don't know if I've said in this interview, is that very much the inspiration for this was the fact that in those earlier years, when I would find gay fiction, the characters never seemed to have anything to do with the life I was leading. Mm-hmm. And I very much wanted to write about guys who were out of that urban, gay mainstream. I wanted to write about the guys who lived in out-of-the-way places and were coping and living and surviving. And that was very much where the inspiration for this came from. And also, I think, too, that because of the struggles that we go through as gay men, we have a tendency to get a little jaded, a little cynical, and very guarded about our emotions and feelings. And in this book, I really strip that away. This is very basic. This is exactly how these people feel. They're not holding back. They're not hiding. And I think that comes as a bit of a shock to some people, but it also is a huge breath of fresh air to a great many people, because they told me it is. So.
Sure, of course. Well, this is great, Nick. And again, thank you so much for spending the time with us, talking to us, and giving us such a great insight in your book, and actually both of your books. And I'd like to remind our listening audience that you can link to Nick's author page on Inside Scoop Live, or the book review on Reader Views, and there are links to purchase. You can purchase them through Amazon, or you can actually go to Nick's website, and I'm sure that he'd be willing to send you an autographed copy. So I am your host, Irene Watson, and thank you again for listening and supporting Nick Poff, the author of The Handyman's Dream and The Handyman's Reality. I invite you to check our other interviews and listen in. Bye for now.